tähelepanu, vaiksemalt nüüd. Eetris on jälle küberkäest. See on saade, mis jutustab lahti arusaadavalt neid erinevaid kübermaailma müstiliseks peetavaid tahkusid, millest täna juttu teeme. Ronni käis vahepeal Latitude'i konverentsil ja püüdis sealt kinni kogenud startup coachi Kalev Kaarna. Ja millest nad oma vahel rääkisid, jutustasid nad siis kommunikatsioonist. Sest kõigi võib tunduda, et kübermaailm on läbi neesti tehniline, siis tehnikat võib siiski inimene ja selge kommunikatsioon on oluline nii ettevõtte edukaks juhtimiseks kui näiteks küberintsidentide lahendamisel. Eks meil kõigil on mingisuguseid kogemusi elust, et rahulikus olukorras me suudame ennast suhteliselt arusaadavalt väljendada ja oma mõtteid ja soove kommunikeerida. Aga kui olukord läheb pingeliseks, siis meie sükkene väljendusoskus võib vaikselt lagunema hakata. Õnneks on trikke, mis aitavad ka nendes keerulistes olukordades meeskonnas konflikte vältida ja kommunikatsiooni edavise viivana hoida. Ja mis need trikid on, eks siis Ronni ja Kalev räägivad lähemalt. Kuna konverents toimus inglise keeles, siis on ka selle osa sisu seekord inglise keelne. Aga enne kui ma veel Ronnile sõna annan, siis ka meie see igakordne kiire üleskutse, et kui teile tänane saade meeldis, siis pange aga seda likei, subscribe'i kõik võimalikes keskkondades, kus meid kuulda võib. On see siis SoundCloud või Spotify või Apple Podcast. Ja antke ka sõpradele tuttavatele teada, et mida mõnusat kuulasite ja soovitage siis meid endil ka kuulata. Aga eks midagi, nüüd siis tänase osa sisu juurde.
Hello, hello. Hello, ever so vibrant Latitude 59. So, a little raise of hands, who is listening us? One listener we have, two listeners, oh, we have many listeners around. So, hello and welcome to this very special edition of Kübercast. Kübercast is a well-seasoned and established cyber podcast. But this very, very special edition of Kübercast is well, not about cyber. We sit down with a well-seasoned startup coach and a no-bullshit person, Kalev Kaarna. He is hosting a workshop titled Difficult Conversations, Brutal Honesty Without Being a Jerk. And that's something that caught my eye. And I couldn't resist myself in inviting Kalev to Kübercast and talk about it. You may think, hey, this is a cyber team podcast, and why is this relevant? But let me tell you, wherever there are people and they talk to each other, well, in cyber as well, it's a thing. No matter that most of the talk is most of the business around cyber is well technology, but there are other pillars there as well. Since well we are humans and but as computers talk to each other using protocols and standards, there is little room for errors. Then we humans have plenty of room in our discussions around bullshit and well misunderstandings, and misunderstandings waste time, and in critical situations it may also cost lives, and well usually bullshit wastes money. So, and also there is a big buzz around a new tool that human being has invented, and that tool is called artificial intelligence. I think you've heard of that on this event as well. Well, and as it boils down, there is an art called prompt crafting, and that involves also concise communication. you need to be well articulated to talk to the machine to get what you want from the machine. But yes, it's enough about me, enough about us, and let's go to the discussion, because we have around Kalev here, and welcome to the show, Kalev Kaarna.
Pleasure to be here.
I would like to ask you, on this wonderful, wonderful set, sun, warm, who are you?
Yeah, why I'm here and why I'm any good at talking about difficult conversations. For the last 15 years or so, I've been helping entrepreneurs in one form or the other, like Brain Hunt competition, IUJAT in Estonia, Idea Lab at University of Tartu, and the last 5 years I was part of Super Angel investment fund team as a startup coach and investor, and my role was to run the growth program for portfolio startups, which also had a spillover effect to the whole startup ecosystem. We did events for hundreds of people. During this process, I've been super lucky, from one hand, to learn for my own experience, to learn the best tools and skills in order to solve conflicts and communicate more clearly and make better decisions, like as a team. And I've been super lucky to to have a friend and colleague, LR Kilomets, who invited me in to have access to the knowledge and working together with world-class experts in communication training and company development, like Jervis Bush and Chris Crosby and Gilmore Crosby. I'm like one or two steps ahead of average startup founder, and that's why I think this makes me the best guy to help you to navigate that.
So you go to load of events, you talk to loads of people, so you don't have too much room for bullshit. So you have to be quite straightforward. So please define a clear communication in simple terms. What is it? What it boils down to?
I will step back, Ronnie, that if I would ask you that what do you think, what percentage of startups fail because of they couldn't find market demand or the tech didn't work? Was it like half, more than half, less than half?
Less than half.
Less than half. You're right. By the study of Noam Wasserman, 35% cases only that the startups couldn't find the demand or the tech didn't work. And now the question is, what was the other 65? And the other 65 was conflicts between founders, between founders and investors, between founders and key specialists, or a combination of those.
So human error. Not machine error, not technology error, but human error.
Exactly. So that's why clear communication is super important for startups to prevent and solve conflicts, have a culture of accountability, and maintain the speed of growth.
Yes, but that's a difficult task because for me myself, technology is simple, humans are difficult. So what is clear communication? What is it?
I would like to define it that the clear communication starts with communicating what I think, what I feel, and what I want without shaming and blaming anybody. That usually we need the communication in a high intensity situations where temperature is high, pressure is high, something is failing, we have to decide fast, we have to get somebody to change their behavior, and this is where the communication becomes important, because if everything is chill, everything is going smoothly,
no problems,
everybody can communicate clearly. That the problem is when it's under high pressure, anxiety, how to then make sure that people get what I want to communicate. And to give you an example of how difficult it actually is, there was a startup we worked with, and their team had worked together for 4 years. Team of four founders, and they had worked really long together. And challenge what they saw that they had like too many options to go for. And so we worked. That was the initial reason why they invited. Hey guys, let's do something to fix it. And we through the training, we created a space where they could communicate. Each team member, what do they feel, what's holding them back from moving on faster. And despite the fact that this team had worked together 4 years, this was the first time they were able to communicate to the CEO, hey guy, we hate how you make decisions.
Ah, okay, so fear.
So not only fear, but also that I don't want to... If I see something in a company which is not working, there's basically I have three options. either I hope for luck, that if I wait long enough, the problem will disappear and the other person understands himself or herself that such behavior is not good and they fix themselves. Second option is that aggressive changing behavior, that I go in openly shame and blame in order to make the person to feel ashamed and quickly fix their behavior the way I want. The third option is a calm dialogue, where I actually go in and try to understand first the other side and explaining that how I see things, how they see things, and then try to discover what's the best way to move forward. So in their case, the CEO used to like to do consensus-based decisions.
So democracy.
Absolute democracy, that if we didn't reach the consensus in the meeting regarding the product roadmap, regarding the which features to kill, which features to develop further, which markets to go, if we didn't get the consensus, we postpone it to the next meeting. And this was like what the team hated. And through this training, what we did them, they learned a few tricks how to bring such topics on the table without shame and blame. And basically it boils down to how you structure your communication, what's your attitude towards your own power, that if you speak something good can happen. And third is that do I communicate what I really want? And do I have humble curiosity? Like that I accept that most of the times if I ask something, people say no. But I'm curious how to get to the yes, so I have multiple runs to try it out.
So you bring structure to the meeting and you create openness within teams, right?
So what I mean by the structure is that usually what's the biggest problem when we communicate is that we don't check what we are saying, that we don't...
The weight of words or...
Weight of words, yeah. That, for example, that if I come to you, Ronnie, and say that it's a fact that you're a jerk, or that, Ronnie, I feel that you are a jerk, neither of these statements...
Thank you.
Neither of these statements are actually neither fact or feeling, because it's just opinion. It's disguised as a fact or disguised as a feeling. So the proper would be that, hi Ronnie, that I have, last week we agreed that you will do this piece of work for Monday, but you send me the script of this interview, what we are going to do today, and now I'm really puzzled that you didn't do it, and now it puts me into a very hard spot, that, and I have a feeling that I might fail the interview because I didn't get on right time the questions, and I want to have a discussion with you that what's your side of the story, and how can we make it so that we have a successful interview. And for our listeners, by the way, I got the questions before, so it's an imaginary case, but I wanted to just to show you that what's the structure, that I go with a fact, that something...
Yeah, and I messages.
And I messages, exactly. That I start with a fact, what I saw, which is true, that I didn't get, let's say, that in this... hypothetical case, I didn't get the email, that's a fact. And then what it made me to think or feel, and expressing, Estonians are super bad at expressing their feelings, but it actually works remarkably well, that because it makes you human. And the other guys kind of relate to you better, and they understand your standpoint much better if you reflect your feelings. And then I ended up with the open want, that what I want from you, that I don't want to shame or blame you, I want to understand your point of view, that what was the logic, and how can we, let's put it into past, in that sense that we can't change, that I didn't get it on time, but how can we make it still a success?
So is this quite basic AO psychology, communication, discussion, feeling, reflections,
non-violent communication. There are many labels to the same thing. They all stem from Kurt Lewin from 1960s, mm-hmm. who did this organizational development and group dynamics research and draw these logics.
I just have two questions. Kind of, is this approach like human approach? Does it ignore culture, or where do you take the culture picture in? Because the value and belief system in multicultural organizations is quite diverse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there are culture differences. That how direct or blunt you can be in different cultures, and the nicest thing is the culture differs how long silence we can stand. Americans can stand about 3 seconds. Estonians and Finns, we can stand 3 hours and nobody is uncomfortable. And I've seen it on stage. It was super funny that Norwegian guy was asked a question by an American interviewer. And the guy took a moment to think, and it lasted like 5 seconds before the lady jumped in and started to offer answers to the question.
Started to solve the problem.
Anxiety went up too much. So this is absolutely real. Now, regarding this expressing myself, what's the fact, how I feel, what I want out of this situation, this is universal. And especially if in a company's... like my colleague Elar Kilumets, he has worked with Japanese. And Japanese have the culture where there's a special term for the aura of the boss. Mm-hmm. So you have to read the aura of the boss, not what he says, but you have to read the aura. So even in these cultures, if you go in there and say, hey guys, does this aura reading create problems for you? They say, absolutely, man. absolutely. And then what if we agree that outside at home, you continue the way behave as the culture dictates you? But what if in this team, in our company, we express ourselves directly, not through aura reading? And they actually can do it. That if we agree that we have a challenge in communicating more clearly and understanding each other correctly and giving feedback that did I understand you correctly, then all cultures are capable of doing it, and just language probably is slightly different.
So the opposite. What is unclear communication? What is the ambiguous? And what is unclear communication? Just as an example.
So usually the biggest communication mush comes when we start to make assumptions, or we form based on something we see, we form opinions about other people, and we start labeling them. And my boss doesn't like me because yesterday, or like a week ago, when I went to a meeting and said hi, he didn't hi me back. And then I started to notice, and when I sit in the opposite table side in the meetings, that he sometimes ignores my opinions or what I say out. And so I make an opinion that my boss doesn't like me. In
so
reality...
You fill your head with your bridge.
You bridge something random, and it could be that you're... boss is father is dying from cancer, and he's occupied with other stuff, and he just didn't pay attention, and you were sitting on the other side of a table and he didn't actually hear you.
What is brutal honesty?
So with a brutal honesty, it boils down to that we very often we are reluctant to speak up our opinions, our feelings, that we are frustrated or we don't like the situation as it is. And just to kind of highlight that the relationships are actually not so fragile, that I can't bring important topics which are important to me, that I can't bring them to the table. And that for most people, it sounds like brutal honesty. but using this structure of fact, opinion, feeling, what I want, that I can bring any topic to the table without shame and blame. And from it sounds like a brutal honesty that I speak up what I really think, but I do it in a form which doesn't hurt or doesn't put the other person into defense.
So what you're speaking of, I am a picture mind. So I form pictures in my mind. And what you're talking to me is that a round of people are in a meeting. It's in my head. And there is shit on the table and nobody wants to talk about it. How to talk about the shit on the table when nobody wants to talk or hear about it? So that's brutal honesty, or?
Absolutely. One way how to go into this, and just to get some kind of inspiration, if you want more examples or how to exactly word it, then recently there was a podcast by Lenny Rachitsky, and it's Lenny's podcast with Kenneth Berger on a topic, why not asking what you want is holding you back. That he gave these examples where you go in and say, hey guys, this is I'm not the CEO, so this is not my call, but we have this issue on the table. I feel that this is a red elephant in a room. It stops us from making decisions, and as long as we don't discuss it, I can't make these decisions in my department, in my job, that it slows down my progress in that I can't achieve my goals. So hey guys, that you have to figure it out how you decide. To give you an example, there was a case of a software company where product manager was brought in, she was a young lady, and the lead senior programmers were all white old guys, old in terms of relative,
like a hair loss,
hairless, yeah, like we, and the problem was that product manager didn't have any executive power over these senior guys, and there was constant conflict regarding should we go left, should we go right, and it was total fight, internal fight. And the girl got some advice on that, that actually she's fighting over things which she is not responsible for, that she has to go and raise it to the C-level, that development and the other guys on the C-level, that they have to decide, should the company with the product go left or to the right? That she as a product manager can't do the decisions on her own because it's not her pay grade level. Mm-hmm. And this was actually very easy. It turned out to be very easy. But when she went to these two guys who had to make a decision and said, hey, I have this total internal fights because you haven't made the decision. And it's kind of forced for me, but I can't do it because I don't have credentials for doing this decision. But do this decision and I can continue working. It took half an hour of discussion for these guys to make the decision. And half a year later, the senior programmer said that this PM is the best they have ever worked with. It's super nice. It's super cool. Everything is clear. Everything is moving in the right direction. And all it took was that this girl had to take the courage of brutal honesty to go to the bosses and say that, hey guys, I need a decision from you, that this is what I want, and this is why it's important that we can't move on without your decision.
But how to work with indecision?
Indecision, it's, as I said, that in any tough situation, you have three options. Hope for the luck, that things go smoothly and I don't have to do anything. Aggressive changing behavior and calm dialogue, that it's the same, that bringing the topic to the table, that for the last 3 months we haven't moved on because we haven't made this decision, that it costs us this and that, and even like bad decision is better than no decision, and discussing that can we make a decision which we can roll back quickly and fast, and can we learn fast, so that kind of take the risk off the table. And this is like way how to go about it, and this like de-risking decisions, this is totally another different topic. That
but how do, or why, or how do people tend to perceive this kind of communication as being a jerkiness or jerk? What makes someone perceive you as a jerk?
That's another interesting topic that in the startup world, I think it started with Steve Jobs, that everybody saw how successful he is, and many people draw the wrong conclusion that in order to be successful, you have to be equal or better jerk than Steve Jobs was. Especially in his first round running the Apple, but in the second round running the Apple, he was much more humble because he had learned with his Nexus, he learned the hard lessons that everything is, if he touches something, everything doesn't become a gold. And you can read that from Tony Fadell's book, Build, a very, very good book, I recommend it highly. He has a chapter about assholes there, and he divides them into two. True assholes and visionary assholes. So he labels Steve Jobs as a visionary asshole, which means that he's so committed to the vision of making the perfect product that he, in order to achieve it, he's willing to yell and be very emotional and so forth. But at least, as Tony Fadell describes, he was never personal. Like, he didn't yell at you because that, hey, Ronnie, you are an idiot because you don't see the things that I tell you that we have to go left and we have to go right. But people were still able to convince him. That, for example,
so he was addressing the issue, not the person.
Exactly. And he was so passionate about getting the result perfect that everybody accepted it. Okay, you yell because you care. And you don't yell at me, you kind of yell at the problem.
Situation. Or
at
problem.
The situation. So so I think that this is... being an ass doesn't make things simpler. That it sometimes with some guys can get away with it, but I wouldn't recommend it as a strategy. That we get back to this Norm Wasserman, that in 65% of cases people startups go bust because of bad relationships.
So kind of tips and tricks for the listeners here. So what are the kind of first steps to start practicing mm-hmm. in clear communication in a professional environment?
So first steps, for those of you in here in Latitude, at 1 o'clock we are going to do, with LR Gilumets, we are going to do a workshop at D-Stage, or D-Room, and come there. But if you want to do it at home, then a few tricks. One is think of a difficult situation you had recently with somebody, and write the problem down. What's the problem?
So check, write the problem down.
Write the problem down, and take time, like 5-10 minutes, write it down. And then write down the same problem by starting each sentence with I saw, I wanted, I didn't understand, whatever. That start every sentence with I. What I can, I have done it several times with different like software developers, teachers, you name it, any different job position. And what most people find out is that when I start with I, the problem descriptions becomes really short. And by stating I, it becomes really clear what to do. Just to give you an example, there's a company manager who was bitching and moaning about the snowflake generation. That they are not motivated, they come to work, they don't want to learn anything. They are not loyal, they like shift jobs very fast and so forth. And when he was asked that, hey, now explain the same problem with starting the word I, a sentence with the word I. He thought for 15 minutes and said that, I don't know how to manage the young generation. And then it like light bulb
became a problem statement.
Yeah, and the light bulb came out that, do you know anybody who has done it? Can I learn it from someone? Has somebody solved this problem? So all this bitching and moaning became like much more clear. And I like this approach that bitching and moaning is good because it's a dream, a disguised dream. That behind every complaint, there is actually a dream of a better world. So if you dig deep enough, you can actually understand what you would want the world to be like and what's your role in there. That how can I actually take practical steps towards changing it? And I think that's another problem with why you said that why it happens so often that no decision, nobody does anything, because we don't believe in our power of changing anything. So it's a classic victim-creator approach, that if I feel that I'm a victim, I have no power, nothing I do will change anything, then it's easy to just hope that things will go better, and the only thing I can do is bitch and moan to somebody else that that boss is super difficult and I can't work with him anymore. Or I have a creator mindset that, okay, it's really crappy situation, but there has to be something I can do about it. There has to be a way how to express it to even to Steve Jobs. But for his team, Steve Jobs actually didn't want to launch iPhone. It took his team like 3 or 4 months to convince him that let's launch iPhone.
Yeah.
So it is possible. That it's possible even to change the mind of Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. So that if we believe that we are curious enough, we are humble, that the first time we ask, we get no, but we try again. We try again. Try again. That Taavi Kotka just posted that 4 years of complaining and bitching and moaning, and his son finally got the dog.
Yeah, that's good perseverance. Yeah. So I would like to thank you. Thank you, Kalev, for coming to this to our podcast. I think we have to wrap up our session and then the podcast track here as well.
Maybe before we do, there's like few things. If you want to start at home, then a few books like Jarvis Bush, Clear Leadership is one to go to understand the structure of how I actually do this communication. And the second book is even better, but how to turn this type of communication into organizational change. How to get stuff done faster, quicker, with limited budget and limited people. It's Dynamics of Generative Change. Awful title, but the content is super good. I highly also recommend the Noam Wasserman Founder's Dilemmas, at, where it boils down with what to do in order to not to F up your startup with ruining your relationships. And also... a new book, Why Startups Fail, by, I lost the author, but it's, we can put it later into show notes.
Yes, we will. We will put all those books you mentioned here into our show notes.
But these get you kind of inspiration and examples that how to clarify communication goals and how to create practical steps, starting with notice yourself. That when do you label, when do you give opinions, when do you talk about facts, and will I use I or we, they language, or try to do more, use, like take one day and use only I language and see what happens.
Thank you for this, Kalev. I will surely try this, and I will, I need that world needs more clear communication, and it's a real thing. Elon Musk is working on that clear communication thing as well, doing its brain-to-brain communication. What was it called? The Neuralink. So that's going to be no bullshit and really fast. That should speed up things.
But I think that it's still, if you think in a wrong way, you just have more confusion directly into your brain.
And with this bombshell, I think that it is good to stop. Thank you, and until next time.
Thank you.